Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and a warm welcome to the Maitreya program. And today we would like to read to you two articles, both about healing the rift we have created with nature and the environment. The first is titled Key to Pandemic Prevention, Heal Broken Relationship with Nature. And it's by Andrea Germanos, and it's from the April 2021 issue of Share International magazine. As the World Health Organization stresses the need for continued measures to prevent the spread of the coronavirus in the face of a global rise in cases, a report out on 9th March 2021 spotlights a new coalition warning that another global pandemic will surely come, barring investment in measures to address the root causes of zoonotic disease outbreaks. Aaron Bernstein of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health told The Guardian, "The COVID-19 vaccines will help rescue us from this current mess, but it won't do a thing to protect us from the next pandemic. Only with actions that stop emerging infections where they start can we end our ill-fated game of Russian roulette with pathogens."
Harvard Chang is part of the Preventing Pandemics at the Source Coalition, which brings together a number of public health experts and environmental organizations. Other coalition partners include Harvard's Global Health Institute, Eco Health Alliance, and Health in Harmony. As The Guardian reported, the coronavirus that caused COVID-19 is thought to have jumped from wild bats to humans, and about two-thirds of diseases that infect humans start in other species, including influenza, HIV, Zika, West Nile, and Ebola viruses. The increasing destruction of nature by farming, logging, and the wild animal trade has brought people and their livestock into closer contact with wildlife and led to a greater increase in diseases crossing from animals to people in recent decades.
Simply put, the coronavirus crisis should come as no surprise. The group says it is something we helped create. In truth, we knew that a pandemic was coming, but we as a global community still failed to take actions to prevent it or adequately prepare for it. And also, the coalition says on their website, as a result, we are facing a worldwide health emergency of epic proportions, along with a global economic crisis and massive human suffering. The broken relationship with nature has made similar public health crises like MERS and Ebola more frequent, and there is a high risk that we will make the same mistake again. The group points to research showing that more than 335 emerging infectious disease outbreaks were reported worldwide from 1940 to 2004, over 50 per decade.
Humanity must seize this moment to undergo a transformation, enabling a recognition of our intertwined relationship with nature to avoid another deadly and economically crippling pandemic, the coalition asserts. To effect that change, the coalition proposes three broad steps. Among them is the creation of a Prevention at the Source Policy Task Force, which the group bills as a transdisciplinary body that would craft and endorse a set of recommendations to push for bold, creative, and actionable policies that will be truly successful in preventing spillover, while also being forward-thinking enough to anticipate and mitigate risks and unintended repercussions.
A global action fund for pandemic prevention would further aid prevention by financing a pipeline of existing prevention solutions and a search for new solutions. Rounding out the solution blueprint is a proposed global campaign to boost public knowledge about pandemic prevention. The group says a mindset shift is needed in governments around the world so that prevention is seen as a top political priority, alongside health systems preparedness. Influencing public opinion on a topic is one of the most effective advocacy tools that can help achieve this shift.
The coalition directed its focus in February 2021 to congressional leaders in the U.S. In an open letter, the group called for pandemic prevention. If COVID-19 has made one thing clear, it is that the cost of even the boldest initiative to prevent future pandemics is orders of magnitude less than the price we pay once a pandemic occurs, they told the lawmakers.
As such, the coalition said that coronavirus relief funds should include significant funds for programs that help prevent at the source. Measures must include the creation of the proposed Global Fund for Pandemic Prevention with an initial $2.5 billion commitment. Building back better also means enhancing global health security, which must also include US leadership and investments to prevent pandemics at the source. And that article was taken from the commondreams.org website.
Okay, now our next piece is about a woman who may be a household name in time. Her name is Vandana Shiva, an Indian activist, and the following is a movie review by Cher Gilmore. Vandana Shiva is a familiar name to many, but an inspiring, intimate, and beautifully filmed new documentary, The Seeds of Vandana Shiva, reveals the large picture of her life. It highlights the wide scope of Dr. Shiva's impact on India especially, but also on Africa, Latin America, and global thoughts regarding environmental policy, agriculture, and food. From her childhood in the Himalayan hills, accompanying her father on his rounds as a protector of the forest, Vandana absorbed viscerally an awareness of the interconnectedness of all life. She learned from him about all the plants and animals that form an interdependent web of life, and this knowledge informed her later pursuits as a fierce protector of both people and the natural world.
Albert Einstein, who connected intuition with the best of science, was her inspiration as a young woman, and she began studying to become a nuclear physicist. However, her sister Mira, a medical doctor, jolted her into realizing the limits of science and technology alone in solving big problems. When she reminded Vandana of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the devastating health effects of radiation on the Japanese people. At that moment, she gave up the idea of being a nuclear physicist, realizing that a science that only teaches you to modify nature without the understanding of what that modification does to the larger world is not a complete science. Soon, though, she discovered quantum theory and went on to earn her PhD in that field from the University of Western Ontario in Canada.
In breaks from her studies in Canada, she joined a protest by the Chipko women of India who fought to save the forests they depended on for sustenance from loggers by hugging threatened trees to block their chainsaws. These illiterate women were the original tree huggers in 1981. The government banned logging in the high altitudes after Dr. Shiva's independent study showed the cost of the flooding caused by logging was more than the value of the logged trees. Each experience of eco-activism led to the next. In the water wars of 1982, surface mining of limestone was robbing the Doon Valley of its water source. Mining waste was destroying the streams, and workers were being exploited and killed. Dr. Shiva again did studies and presented to the Indian Supreme Court her findings that leaving the limestone in place was worth more than mining it, when repairing damage to the water sources was included in the equation. Her work saved the valley.
She concluded from these two experiences that she could do the most good by working independently and inaugurated her modest research foundation for science, technology and ecology in her parents' rebuilt cowshed. She believed that when money is your master, then your conscience is no more your guide. In 1984, she took on the false promises of the Green Revolution, which was India's introduction to chemical agriculture. She found that instead of leading to more and better food, the Green Revolution actually brought dying soils, dying rivers, and desertification, and dispossessed 25% of small farmers. Sustainable agriculture then became her new focus, and a biotechnology conference awakened her to the threat of GMOs, which are genetically modified organisms.
Dr. Shiva concluded that GMOs were not designed for feeding the world, but were in fact the only way companies could patent seeds, which would allow them to own life on Earth. Therefore, the industry was lobbying for an international treaty to open national doors to GMOs. Industrial agriculture, she understood, needs machines and monoculture, and therefore needs to get rid of the small farmer. So she put GMOs in her crosshairs, and seed saving became her passion. She travelled around the country giving talks to farmers about sharing and saving seeds, and with the help of the largest farming group, organised huge anti-GMO rallies of between 200,000 and 500,000 small farmers between 1992 and 1994. In 1994, she set up a training and research farm, buying land bit by bit to raise and collect seeds for a seed bank. On land that was previously a sugarcane monoculture, her team was ultimately able to grow 260 varieties of rice suitable for that climate.
After the Seattle, Washington protests against Monsanto shut down the World Trade Organization's conference in 1999, Dr. Shiva led the fight against Monsanto's cotton GMO BT. And BT, also called Bacillus thuringiensis, is a soil-dwelling bacterium that produces a toxin fatal to certain insects. And that was in India, which had resulted in 284,000 farmer suicides. The farmers had been encouraged to exchange their own seeds for Monsanto's higher quality seeds, which were more expensive by 8,000% and grew only one crop, so no seed saving. However, not only did the seeds fail to prevent bollworms as promised, the BT cotton required more pesticides to kill what became super bollworms. More pests led to more spraying, more expense, more debt, and finally suicides.
Dr. Shiva's weapon of choice against industrial agriculture are education and seed saving. Today, there are 127 seed banks in India supplied by a network of farmers and seed savers who also get training in organic farming. And when Dr. Shiva heard of the big rush to introduce GMOs in Africa, she went there to support Africa's farmers and warned them about India's experience. Now globalization is threatening Latin American farmers, and she continues to travel to wherever she sees the need.
Recently, Dr. Shiva has pivoted slightly to championing soil regeneration because, she points out, non-sustainable forms of agriculture are responsible for 40% of the greenhouse gas emissions driving climate change. Food can be grown in ecologically sustainable and just ways, but a paradigm shift is needed. If we understand how interconnectedness on the earth is a fact, she says, we can all find a place to be the change in the ecological food web. She recommends that we maintain a constant quest for what's next, and she's a living example of that philosophy. For more information, you can check out the website vandanashivamovie.com.
Right. Well, we've got a bit more time, and we might talk about some questions and answers for Benjamin Krim. And here's one here. What are angels? And Mr. Krim answers, angels exist. They are a quite separate evolution from the human, a kind of parallel evolution to the human. In the East, they are called the Deva evolution or the angelic evolution. They are all the way from the very subhuman elementals on the involutionary arc to great beings, archangels, far higher than humans, on the evolutionary arc. So it's an unbelievably varied evolution all the way down into matter. These elementals are used to upholding the matter of the planet. And on the evolutionary arc, the lower builders, as they are called, those who create the trees, the flowers, the vegetation of the planet, who administer the weather of the planet, who look after the springs, the rivers, all of that is the activity in matter of these tiny little devic or angelic lives, which are subhuman. And in acting in this way, they gradually evolve to come near the human evolution. The human stage is the stage through which everything passes, from that which is not yet human to that which is human and to that which goes beyond the human. There are angelic beings way above the human, just as the masters are really above the human. They have gone through the human stage and reached the stage above the human, which is the soul stage. They are the kingdom of souls. They are not to be confused with angels.
People today are experiencing angels all over the world in every country. It becomes a number one hot talking point everywhere, from the media to the dining room and so on. Everybody has now experienced an angel, it would seem. These angels are not angels. These angels are masters. The masters act as if they were angels, saving people from all sorts of tragedies, death in a car crash, drowning or falling off a cliff or whatever. These innumerable instances of being saved by angels are, in every case, done by masters who show themselves as angels. They can change their appearance at will. People think of angels with big wings and so on. They don't have big wings. They don't need wings. It's a thought form which humans have about angels. So the masters use that thought form, appear as angels, and people say, "An angel saved me." It did, but it was a master. Now, angels exist in their own right, but they don't have this contact with humanity which people imagine they do. Not yet. But one day in the future, there will be a close relationship between the human kingdom and the angelic evolution. They are great healers and have much to confer on humanity in terms of the healing arts.
Right, I have another question. That leads me to ask, do we each have a guardian angel? And Mr. Kramer says, we do indeed have a guardian angel. And people think that when they're being saved, it is their guardian angel who is their guardian. But it is not like that at all. The guardian angel does not save you from mishap or from a tragic and dangerous situation. A guardian angel keeps you on the path of evolution. That's its role. Where you might stray into the involutionary path through black magic and evil activities, the role of the guardian angel is to keep you on the straight path to God, which is the path of light, through the evolutionary process, and of which the masters that I am talking about are the custodians.
And one last short question. So can you speak to them? And the answer, you can't speak to your guardian angel. People pray to them, but it is the masters who hear and who respond. Well, that is all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening in. For more information, check out the website, share-international.org. And otherwise, you're most welcome to contact us via the email address, sharenz@yahoo.com. Wishing you all a lovely week.